The following episode of The Love Bomb is brought to you by Spoke. It's a new free listening app from SiriusXM.
The following is an at-will presentation.
Janine Garofalo, card type Daria, tarot, seen on stage and screens, extensive portfolio, career spanning over two decades, started stand-up, standing up in hand, paper page, written jokes, memory not great, desert dry pan, dead cynicism, guess she just prefers to see the dark side of things, glass always half empty and cracked, caught her lip on it, fact, tooth chipped, but in that bred activism, that dark type created that girl's archetype, humor cuts you in half, that quiet stab, the political speaker, bleaker, hyper-intelligent realism, free to critique her freaker feminism, asexual relationship for 17 years, I guess she had a real friend in him. A casual relationship with hours, no work ethic, but I'm skeptic. 50-plus projects, Romy, Michelle, Ben Stiller, tell Larry Saunders this summer's American, hot, wet, hot breath, hot, no work ethic? I bet not. Listen, young people, she understands narcissism, clearly, but she says she hates herself. She's cheery. And apparently that's what we're missing, this debilitating self-loathing and second-guessing. Right now, San Francisco's hissing, but what's missing? You see, I know there's something more behind this girl. Catholic, Italian, Irish, intellectually Irish. I can see it in her eyes. Seen more, seen, smile, gleams more light than dark sheens. Even though I'm sure she's uncomfortable with these rhymes and alliterations, this is just my version of creation. Making observations not just to get laughs, but to get going, get rolling on this conversation. You see, I have questions for the girl that eats just one meal a day. Like today, what does it mean to be a woman? Shaping a woman yesterday, shapes of a woman are all okay for everyone to think that you're gay. And obviously, what does love feel like, Janine? Love for the craft, love for the act, love for the present, future, love for the past. So let's get this going, flowing. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't worried. I may say the wrong thing. I hope I didn't already say the wrong thing. After all, there is no greater act of courage than being the one who kisses first.
Explosive shockwaves can cause situations such as body displacement, emotional breakthroughs, relatable flashbacks, and love.
This is a conversation with a human I love named Janine.
How do you know all these things?
I did my research.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. That's very, very kind, very flattering, and I get uncomfortable when people do nice, you know.
Yeah.
Nice things. But actually, you touched on some interesting, which I always feel like I'm a pragmatist of anything.
Right.
And I was recently having a discussion with some people about how embarrassing it is the one's early stand-up.
You know what
I
mean?
And luckily, when I started in 1985, it wasn't a surveillance society.
Right, totally.
And so you get to fail privately and things of that nature. But there are some preserved, filmed stand-up sets of mine when I was younger than I am now that embarrasses me. I was never that deadpan and cynical.
You
and
weren't.
But it was complete insecurity, and I regret it so much when, on the rare occasions when I do see bits and pieces of earlier stand-up sets,
right,
when you're channel surfing or something.
Yeah, totally.
It bothers me so much. Not only that I wasn't myself, and actually live I was myself, but if you put a camera on it, until I was a bit older, you know, in my 30s even, you know, I started doing stand-up when I was 19. I was not really entirely comfortable on stage until about 10 years in.
Hmm.
But even with that, after that, if I was filmed, I was
so uncomfortable. Yeah.
Yes, and very uncomfortable with it. And I would speak in a manner that was kind of like a lower register of voice or not move my body much. And I regret that that was not me on stage if you saw me outside of that context, and not me as a person. And then also some of the earlier, I didn't start acting until I was 27, which is late, you know, especially for a female.
For a girl.
And I was unfortunately typecast early on as a I guess, a negative type person or a person who is dour. And that's also not. I'm actually quite chatty.
Right.
I'd like to think I'm very polite.
Yeah.
especially since I quit drinking years ago, I became more polite.
I think I did too when I quit drinking.
that and it's like, what a, if I had known then that it would create a typecasting that would not serve me well moving forward in my career.
Right.
I would have fought that instinct of insecurity and said, just be your, you know what I mean? Don't. Keep. I was just so flattered that I got so many roles in the 90s. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that you should think of the long game and not do the same. Because once, in a lot of cases, if you're pigeonholed, classified, put to the side, you know, been there, you know, people. And then if the perception is that you are a has-been, and I don't mean this self-deprecating.
Right.
The perception is the reality until someone says it isn't. Mm-hmm. And you got to wait. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
and so,
no,
like,
totally.
Even in your very informed spoken word piece you just did, it touches on all those things I was just having a conversation about with a friend of mine who started at a similar time when I did with stand-up, and we were talking about all the changes from when you're 19.
Yeah, totally.
Well, hopefully one of all. Hopefully no matter what your vocation or who you are a work in progress.
Right. So do you feel like a different person today than you did on stage at 19?
Well, I'm 53. Right, so if I was not, that would be unusual, it would be such a severe case of arrested development that would be sad for everyone.
Do you feel like this archetype, though, that like you kind of created from doing those acts and like especially them being in film, do you feel like they like helped progress or help shape like what a woman was in the 90s at all?
You know, I don't know. It wasn't anything I created. As I said, the first acting job I had, proper acting job, was the Larry Sanders Show. But in the same year, I also was on the Ben Stiller Show.
Right.
And that was only because I knew both those gentlemen, Ben Stiller and the late, great Gary Shandling from stand-up. I didn't have to audition. I didn't realize what it meant. You know, now I have to audition and stuff if I'm even lucky enough to get in the room. But back then, it was like, do you want to do this show? And in the Larry Sanders Show, I was playing a person who was a person who worked at the Letterman Show, because that show was loosely based on behind the scenes at Letterman. And I was asked to be the way that I was there. And then, unfortunately, commensurate with that, in my stand-up, if it was filmed, I was insecure and just by default went into that type of mode.
Yeah. And so was it a completely different act if you weren't being filmed?
It was just the way I'm speaking to you now. More,
right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Much more animated and like I said, with the glass half full, half empty, I guess I thought that was clever at the time to say that.
It was kind of like in. It was like a trend at
I guess
that point,
it was
too.
Just, you know, something to say. And I think of myself now as a critical thinker, a pragmatist, like I said.
Well,
you know,
is the glass half full or half empty today?
It's case by case.
Case by case.
Yeah, yeah. It just depends on the day and depends on the situation. But unfortunately, also the way you look can define you, much to your chagrin.
Totally.
If you go into entertainment, and people will make the decision for you.
Mm-hmm.
And
because there's not a lot of imagination in this industry.
Oh,
really,
not in mainstream. Not in mainstream. In fact, it runs counter to that.
Totally.
The very, very lucky.
Yeah.
In SAG-AFTRA, who not only have maintained the protection of sustained career success, which is like an umbrella of protection.
Yeah, for sure.
If you can sustain. Whether it be character actor, leading, actor, what have you.
Whatever,
if you can sustain it over the years, you can do what you want.
Hmm.
If you do not, you have no protection and you will do or be, if you're lucky enough to even get the job, you know, what that person says, and you have a very little, it's not really a collaboration. And I'm talking about mainstream.
Right, yeah,
part,
totally.
But that is the nature of mainstream entertainment. And and no one makes us do this. It is elective, so I'm not complaining about it. It would be ridiculous to complain about something that no one has forced you to do, you know, and that you are not obligated to continue doing.
Right.
So,
well, who is Janine Garofalo then?
Who is Janine? I guess.
If you had to say that.
Well, we met earlier, so that would be me.
Uh-huh, yeah.
The person on your show.
Right.
I'm not terribly complex, and I'm not terribly interesting. I regret to inform you.
I don't think that's true.
I don't know if I am or I'm not. I feel like a fairly average for the most part.
Okay.
I guess the only unique thing is the career path I chose.
Right.
It's not unique to us, you know.
But it's unique to the world.
It's unique in the aggregate. Mm-hmm. And also that I've never wanted to be married or have children. I guess you could consider in the aggregate is unique.
Right.
Other than that, and I was a straight C student. Yeah. Absolutely straight C.
I was pretty much, too.
Student. And that was, as I like to say, a gentleman C.
Yeah.
You know, it should have been D or by the skin of my teeth, I graduated high school and college. And I'm not proud of that. I've educated myself much more.
Obviously.
Later in life.
Yeah, yeah.
But
how did you get into the entertainment industry? Why did you choose this path?
Well, when I was a younger person, I used to really enjoy listening to my older brother's comedy albums, George Carlin and Cheech and Chong.
Yeah.
When I was slightly older, Steve Martin and Albert Brooks. My parents also had Nichols and May albums and Bob and Ray. Mm. And I would listen to these things the way – and also back in the 70s and 60s, people listened to comedy albums more than they do now. And then HBO sort of came to be in the 70s, and we were one of the first families, I think almost like a test family, to even have HBO in the home.
Hmm.
And they had a lot of stand-up specials.
Yeah.
And so
It started a lot with stand-up specials.
It had really the bulk of it in some ways. Or The Great Santini.
Mm-hmm.
You could watch that 8,000 times, The Great Santini, and Swept Away.
Yeah, yeah.
The original version. It just intrigued me, interested me, and I was... also, when I was younger, SCTV, in 75, SCTV and Saturday Night Live came out at the same time.
Right.
And I became actually much more obsessed with SCTV, but I enjoyed SNL.
Yeah.
And Woody Allen's movies.
Ah, genius.
I just became very interested in that world. Mm-hmm. And then by the time I was in high school, I thought, I think I'd like to go to Second City, you know. But my parents worked very, very hard to send us to college.
Right.
They were of a generation that felt that you must do it. My mom didn't go, and she always felt that...
She missed out on something.
Yeah, and my dad was the first in his family to get past the eighth grade. Now, that sounds crazy to younger people, but he's 80, if you want to think back.
And where did you grow up? Here?
I grew up in New Jersey.
In Jersey, yeah, yeah.
For the most part. A little bit in Houston, but mostly New Jersey, and my parents are from the Bronx.
Mm.
And...
Old school Italian, Bronx.
Well, my father's neighborhood, my mother's was the Irish neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And... they just believed, from the generation they're from, that you have to do it. And they were really good to us, their children. And so that was non-negotiable.
Right.
So I think my father was like, well, if you just go, he thought I would forget that I want to do that. And but I wound up starting to do stand-up my junior year because
there
was
college.
Where
did you go to school?
Providence College in Rhode Island.
Okay.
And... the open mic scene was flourishing. You know what I mean? There's comedy booms and busts, and there just happened to be a boom in the mid-'80s of comedy. And there was stage time to be had, and so I just started doing it and never stopped. That's one of the only things I've ever stuck with. I regret to inform you. I'm a quitter.
Mm.
I'm a bit of a quitter.
Okay.
Which feeds into, I was thinking about the theme of your show, I guess, when you mentioned it, discussing what is love, and I was thinking, like, it's such an abstract concept.
Totally.
But if I tried to connect it to how I see it in some ways, it's something that interests you and you stick with, that you notice it, you hope it notices you,
right.
You want to be a part of it, whether it as a witness to or involved in it, and you don't lose a taste for it.
Right.
You know,
it changes, yeah. The taste
it can change
changes,
and evolve, but like there's, you know, if you're talking about romantic love, that can come and go.
Right.
But people never get tired of what their favorite food or their favorite, you know, whatever their hobby is there are things I'm sure you noticed when you were a child that are still as exciting and interesting
of
to
course,
you
yeah.
to this day. So you love it.
Yeah.
And... that's sort of how I was thinking of, like, well, how can I answer?
Yeah, I love that.
Your question.
Right,
because it's a hard one to answer.
I think we think, like, as a culture, we talk about it all the time. But, like, I don't think we really can hit the nail on the head with it because it's such a wide conversation.
It can be many things.
Right.
But people use it like a lot of words so much that it loses its meaning.
For
like,
sure.
Oh, I love that shirt. Or love it. You know, or whatever.
Yeah, totally.
It's like, or like when people say genius all the time. It just means nothing, you know.
Yeah.
And
what was your parents' relationship like growing up?
interesting. Well, they got married as teenagers because my mom became pregnant. I mean, they loved each other, but I don't know that they meant to get married. And my dad was still in school, and my mom was working as a secretary very near here, actually. Yeah. But they were committed as a team to child rearing.
Right.
And then my mom passed away when I was younger, and then my dad remarried a wonderful woman, who and they are committed again. Their love of grandchildren, the church.
The church.
Grandchildren, they're both very religious. My mom was a shy atheist. She would not admit to it, and she was a Democrat. But my father is a
Catholic.
Loud and proud, conservative Catholic Republican. Mm-hmm. And so she just never felt comfortable asserting herself.
Were you in church every Sunday?
Oh, yes. Which is not unusual, you know.
No,
and then
not
I
at
went
all.
To CCD, but I was quite religious too. I was a part of CYO, Catholic Youth Organization. Yeah. I went, Providence College is a religious university, which I went to by choice.
Ah.
But by the time I was a senior, I was
done with it.
Agnostic.
Really?
And that was just out of fear, being agnostic. And I thought, no, I've got to go the whole, I think I'm an atheist until such time as there's any proof. And I don't say that flippantly. I say, until such time as there's proof of a deity or what have you.
Right.
So still, I'm going to have to...
Still today, you would say you're an atheist?
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's been no proof
that
I've ever seen that there is a deity of any kind.
Mm.
No matter what... The big three, let's use the big three, you know, whatever theisms are the main ones.
Well, what's your experience with psychedelics?
Oh, I just garden variety.
Uh-huh.
You know, when I was younger, mushrooms and acid were things I enjoyed very much. Mm-hmm. It never broke me through to a...
Mm-hmm.
To there
Some
is a
sort higher, of
higher
power.
Power.
Yeah.
And I actually... I'm intrigued by science.
Yeah.
That science, as much as it can, answers all the big questions. It's quite fascinating. You know what I mean? Like, if you're looking for some emotional solace.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I am not denying that there's part of the human condition to need these,
right, of course,
these things, or to make it more spiritual than it may be.
Mm-hmm.
And especially, and I say this with respect, people have very difficult lives. I begrudge them nothing. If they need to believe that there's a better world that's coming... Mm-hmm. The second time after they pass, I understand that fully. I would never wish to take that away from someone. And nor could I. I mean, if their faith is stronger than...
Totally.
And they don't care what I have to say about it. But I do think that in many cases, faith is used as a blunt instrument in society. It is not used for good. It is also used to put a narrower frame on your thinking process, and it can make people petty, angry, tribal.
Yeah.
It can bring out the worst in some people.
Have you ever had any paranormal experiences?
Not that I'm aware of.
No?
Mm-mm.
Hmm. Interesting.
I'm assuming you have had both. So let's hear about it. Come on.
I have. I've had both. As a kid, I was convinced that I was seeing ghosts and was absolutely terrified of it. Would, like, cry myself to sleep. I would, like, run up the stairs closing my eyes every single night. And I was told by another family member that I just had to completely erase this idea. And I did. I just, like, completely let it go. And then I was working in this theater in Chicago in high school that was apparently the most haunted place in Chicago. And, like, I saw the woman in the white dress and felt, like, heard footsteps walking up the stairs behind me.
But you're predisposed to, I would say.
I guess.
And also, it's not unusual for children to see ghosts and things. I used to, after, when I saw The Exorcist, I slept on the floor in my brother's room for years because I was convinced I would be possessed.
Right.
You know, the mind truly is, you will see what your mind, and there's nothing more powerful than a fixed idea, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not trying to undercut what you're saying, what I'm saying is if your mind, if you believe that, then it's true for you.
Right.
And if you're open to it because of your childhood experiences, you'll see that woman in the white.
But it goes the other way, too. If you believe that it doesn't exist, if you don't believe in spirituality or any sort of religion, it won't exist for you.
Well, like I said, when there's proof, and I used to very much believe in these things, but also, especially in modern culture, nothing goes undocumented.
Yeah.
Nothing goes unseen.
But I mean, all of these—
Nobody,
like,
films these things. There's no— why is no one busting out their phone to look at the woman in the white dress?
Right. Well, I mean, there are. There's TV shows that are completely built on these ideas.
Right, but it's there's no evidence whatsoever in the shows. It's amazing how much evidence they don't get on film on a nightly basis these shows.
This is very true.
There is no
evidence.
It's but they are titillating shows that you, like when they go, dude, what's that sound? Or they play back the tape and then they put the subtitles under it. Then you'll hear what they claim.
But there's like thousands of accounts of near-death experiences where you like go into these trances and you see what the other side looks like.
And there's thousands of accounts of Virgin Mary appearing to people like Joan of Arc. Mm-hmm. But also, we don't know what the synapses and the neurons are doing when they fire. And also,
well, the DMT is being released in your brain and you are...
You've been told what you're going to see, right? Everybody sees the same thing. In the same way that after Whitley Strieber wrote his first books about aliens... And apropos of nothing, the cover art drew a picture of an alien.
Right.
How did all these aliens start to look like that? That was just random. You know what I mean? The cover art for that first very successful book of Whitley Strieber's. But then all of a sudden when people would describe
aliens,
the aliens, they looked like that.
Hmm.
And when shortly after The Exorcist, which was a cultural seismic shift, you weren't around when The Exorcist came out, but it produced this mania of people believing they were possessed, and they would exhibit the similar traits of things that they saw on screen.
So it's all creative.
And again, I am not. That's what I find interesting: the power of the mind.
Right.
And that should be something that's fascinating to people. Look how strong your mind is.
Yeah.
And also, if there is no afterlife, which I don't think there is, it doesn't upset me. Before you were born, you were pre-sentient. You have no knowledge. If I were to say to you, "Do you remember that time before you were born?" Right?
I mean, I could.
So you don't
I
miss
could make
it.
Something up.
and then I feel like it will be the same
after
you pass on.
Hmm.
Now, I understand why people want to have these other things. And I understand why the Long Island medium is so appealing.
Hmm.
I don't buy what she's doing at all.
Well, I went on Tyler Henry.
Yes, he seems like a nice kid.
Wonderful kid. Mm-hmm. He brought up facts about my grandpa's death that nobody in the world knows about.
Right, but... Is it true that nobody knows about it? And also with – you can dig up information on people, but also you can say things that are general enough that – or interviews you've done or things you've said. Again, I have no way of knowing. I haven't met this
Right. Kid. No, for sure.
But
do you want to? Do you want me to try to set that up?
No, thank you. But I do find that it provides a great deal of comfort, and it's warming to see people play, especially if the worst thing that could happen to a person is a child. A loss of a child. It is something I feel that you cannot come back from. But what can help you, and I agree with this, if somebody, even if they're not being truthful, if they tell you your child says they're fine and happy, I am all for that. If that provides, because I can't think of a bigger tragedy than a child going before you.
Right.
You know, I don't have children, but I can certainly understand that would be the number one thing that would destroy a person's...
Yeah, I mean... I can't even.
Life. Yeah, it's something that's... And that's why I haven't had children, because I'm risk averse.
Huh.
It's that simple.
Interesting.
I am risk averse.
That's the number one reason.
It is the number one reason.
Wow.
It is something that is so very precious that if anything were to happen, there is no coming back from it.
Huh.
And I just believe that to be true.
Mm.
Now, I love other people's kids, and I have seven nieces and nephews, and I also am a big animal lover and stuff, and I get great satisfaction out of that. And if I really wanted to parent, there's no end of children that need a home, no end of foster kids or big brother, big sister programs I could get involved with.
And you've done that before, right?
No, I have not.
No?
So that tells you something. You know what I mean? Like, if I haven't moved toward action on that. I mean, I have fostered animals and things.
Yeah.
I haven't fostered
children. No, but you've, like, sponsored kids in other countries before?
Oh, yeah. How easy is that? I mean, that requires no heavy lifting whatsoever.
Yeah.
That's...
You just send something.
That's, here's some money.
Exactly.
I don't say that with pride. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that I have made money, and I'm happy to do that.
Right.
You know?
Maybe you lost a child in a past life or something.
Yeah, but I don't think there was a past life.
I know.
But actually, no, you don't have to have lost one in the past to realize the grief of that. You know, you only need to be alive
and have
any empathy whatsoever.
Do you remember the first time you had that thought of, like, what it could be like
actually,
to lose a child?
I do.
Yeah?
No. The first time I had the thought I didn't want to have children was in the fourth grade. And I remember this very clearly because... And this is going to sound terrible, so I'm going to try and be as diplomatic as I can about this. One of my siblings, who has gone on to be a wonderful parent, so was about as textbook a problem child that brought so much pain to my parents. And a lot of it was not his fault. He had this is in the early 70s when people didn't talk about kids with issues that need to be medicated.
Right, yeah.
So it just wasn't in the wind, if you will. So a lot of it was not this particular sibling's fault. But the chaos in the household, the pain and suffering, my parents, who did nothing but love and love and love and, and suffer greatly, made me think, who needs it? You know what I mean? Like, who needs it? And my siblings have gone on to have textbook great children. You know what I mean? And it's a testament to their skills that they picked up from my parents. It's just my parents, unfortunately, and for this particular sibling, unfortunately, had some issues that, that my parents also, as young parents who grew up in a time when you did not discuss
any problems
whatsoever, and had no way to communicate about such things. I do remember, though, in one chaotic thing, when the cops had to come again, or the police had to come. I hate cops. When the police were summoned yet again, and I had some friends over for a sleepover, and it was so embarrassing. And I remember standing in the kitchen and thinking, oh, I'm not doing this. I'm absolutely not doing this. But but I'm not saying, like, boy, people who do it are suckers. I'm just saying it is.
It's just not for you.
It is not for me.
All right.
Not at all, no.
Spreading that love around. This is the love bomb. And this is the show.
Okay, I want to take a few moments here to tell you about Spoke. This is a new listening app from SiriusXM and partner of The Love Bomb. Spoke is more than just a podcast app, okay? It's a social audio platform. You can listen to podcasts, radio programs, documentaries, and so much more. Have you ever had a difficult time finding a podcast? Psh, I know I have. Well, Spoke has a team of curators, real-life human beings, not robots, who help you discover your new favorite podcast by finding the best moments and highlights from shows and organize them into thematic playlists. Choose from close to 100 different playlists. There's just so many podcasts that I want to listen to, but it's a little overwhelming to start listening to each one because I have no idea what I'm going to like or what's good. So this is like a friend sharing their playlist with you, right? Allowing you to listen to the best clips from each song. I love it. If you like what you hear, you can join the conversation, leave a voice comment. You can also share anything you find on the app with friends on social media. That's right, hit me up on the gram. You can download Spoke from the Apple App Store or Google Play. Go to hearspoke.com/atwill to support The Love Bomb and all your other favorite At Will shows.
Spreading that love around, this is The Love Bomb.
Where do you feel like you fit into the spectrum of sexuality and relationships?
Asexual.
You are a stout asexual.
I would say now I can say that I always had an incredibly low libido, like biologically.
Interesting.
Curiously low.
Yeah.
Now, some of it growing up was intense shame and distaste for the way I looked, just really, and which still carries today. I still don't. I've been with the same boyfriend for 17 years. A lot of that has to do with real estate, but we are best friends.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, as our sex life has decreased, our bond
has gotten closer.
It's closer. He's probably my closest friend I've ever had.
He's like family at this point.
Yeah.
I have a girl. Her name is Bethany. We've been together 10 years on and off, but there's nobody in the world that I'm closer to.
Right. Yeah. And we are highly compatible roommates, and we share common interests.
How long have you been living together now?
Probably 12 of the 17 years.
And do you sleep in the same bed?
Yeah. And we have held hands and we kiss hello and goodbye and say I love you.
Yeah,
that's not the issue. The actual intimacy of sexual congress, if you will, that is no longer really a part of it. Now, when I used to drink very heavily, which I don't anymore, I was very sexually active because that was part of the reason I drank. It's like, this is what other people do.
To ignite something. Yeah.
I should do this because this is what other people do. I did know that it seemed on the low end, libido-wise. Yeah. I had crushes and stuff and growing up, but it was usually comedy crushes, like people that I found funny.
It wasn't physical.
It became, I guess, more physical after their personality.
Right.
But also I was a kid who was so almost pathologically, I don't even understand it myself, modest, I guess. Is that the right word? Or I can't take my top off. You know what I mean? Like, I can't have anybody touch me.
Yeah.
You know, just unbelievably, for an extrovert, unbelievably body shy.
Yeah.
Which, and then I became a very overweight kid, which I think had something to do with both A, no discipline, and being allowed to eat whatever we wanted. We any junk food
too,
you could have, ringdings, chilling, devil dogs.
No
my,
limit,
My sisters
too.
And I would eat rice-a-roni for dessert after dinner. Like, we would make rice-a-roni or Kraft macaroni and cheese after dinner. And we were never told that we shouldn't do that.
Right.
And so naturally, there was that. But I also think it made me more comfortable because then no one showed interest in me.
It was a defense
mechanism. If that makes sense. So it's as simple or as complex as that.
Right.
And in college, there was almost no interest in me. The only time some male attention came was when I started becoming more known on television.
Recognized,
there's a current, there's something about that I guess is appealing to some people.
Huh?
And so some of the first relationships I had in my late 20s were almost as if I was 13.
Huh.
It was like where anybody else should have been doing when they were 12, 13, 14, 15. I was starting from there. And then I would drink very heavily because I knew sex had to be part of it. You cannot
crumble the wall,
Because I'd had sex for the first time when I was 21.
21.
And then not again until I was 27.
Mm.
I mean, I did other things, but not actual sex.
Was there any like self-pleasure that was going on in these years? Not at all.
No.
Mm-mm. Wow.
And that was left over, oddly, from religious stuff. And also my mother's mother, who was born in Northern Ireland in 1898. She's dead now. If you want to catch where that's coming from. 1898,
Northern Ireland.
And then emigrated over here. And then very quickly, both her parents succumbed to some epidemic, you know, and she was one of 13 children.
Wow.
A couple of her siblings, you know, died however you die in that era.
Right.
Like
TB or something.
The boys got hit on the head with a rock.
Yeah.
Honestly. And she became, as the oldest girl, the mom. And not only was
she the mom,
rough, difficult to deal with. She was pathologically body shamed and constantly trying to tell my sisters and I, cover up, you know, that there is something
wrong,
inherently suspicious and wrong about sexualized behavior, wearing makeup, anything like that.
Something evil about it.
And then also, like everyone does, there was a perverted uncle who, as my siblings and I became pubescent, his unwanted advances. Not that it was just garden varieties. You know what I mean? Again, not poor me at all. I had a lovely childhood. Mm-hmm. So please don't misunderstand.
I got you.
That felt, you combine those two and it goes a long way. You know what I mean? And then also fear of, because my parents got pregnant as teenagers. Do not, you know what I mean? But not in a fire and brimstone way. That was a practical thing. You have to make it past your teens, not getting pregnant. You can't get married young. They so didn't want us to get married young.
Right.
Because there's so many things to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they wanted their children to be married at some point and stuff, but not.
Be successful first. And
or just find out who you are first.
Okay.
And so there's that. Then I became very sexually active, drunk.
Right, of course.
And had lots of one night stand stuff because it was fun. It was new.
Right.
And
I mean, was it like pleasurable?
It was.
For you,
it was. I would be embarrassed in the morning when somebody wanted to have daytime sex and I wasn't drunk anymore. Then I would revert back to.
Yeah. Would you start drinking during the day then to have daytime
sex?
Oh,
no. I would try and find excuse. I would do it.
Right.
But I would always try and find a reason to. Or cover myself, you know, be in the bed.
Right.
You know.
Was there ever a point where you were having sober sex that was like enjoyable?
Yes.
With somebody?
Yeah. I was just about to get to that. A very brief window, which I believe was a biological imperative, in my late 30s, early 40s, when somehow I think my body was saying, if you want to breed,
this is it.
Because something kicked in sober that I had not experienced before, like a primal.
Yeah.
And I wanted to have sex, but I didn't want a relationship. And I did, and also I was living at a hotel for a lot of that time, which what could be better? I was living at the Chateau Marmont.
Yeah.
What could be better than a libidinous window and living in a hotel? I know. So it was.
I've had a lot of fucking drunk sex in Chateau.
Yeah, it lends itself. It's really great.
Yeah.
You know, and so it really worked out very well.
Uh-huh.
If I could have had more one night stands with less interaction with these people, these gentlemen, very nice gentlemen.
Yeah.
I didn't have any interest in them staying
in anything past
overnight,
that.
Anything past that.
Were you masturbating more at that point too?
Not really, no, because I still to this day, I am not condemning masturbation in any way.
Yeah, no,
it is something that.
That
embarrasses me.
Ah.
That for some reason has never, and it makes me feel like, oh, I'm doing, it's almost like giving oneself a foot massage. There's no joy to it, but getting a foot massage is really
it's
nice,
great.
Or a
yeah.
massage. But if you do it to yourself with like the rolly things you could buy or
yeah.
putting your foot on a soda can, it's
right.
like, eh. I don't know if that makes sense.
No,
I in no way think it's bad or wrong. It makes me embarrassed.
Yeah, I think you're making that clear.
So it is still embarrassing to me to masturbate.
How many asexuals do you think you've met over the years?
More since I started talking about it. But I don't talk about it like, here's a self-help group.
Right.
It doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
It really doesn't. And
no,
it
no,
doesn't,
I can tell that.
It doesn't make me feel anything. I've, you know, I don't need to find other group of asexuals. But
right.
I guess since sometimes I mention it in
yeah.
stand-up,
they flock,
others,
yeah.
others have come up to me after shows
right.
and said, oh, I think I am too.
Yeah. And, like, thank you for paving the way
to
oh,
no,
a little
no, no,
bit.
No, 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 not that. They're not have a problem. And I haven't paved the way for anything. I just kind of mention it sometimes if I'm talking about something pertinent to that in the context of a stand-up
right.
Set. I don't always mention it. In fact,
mm-hmm.
very rarely. And I've mentioned it only when asked in these types of
situations. Yeah.
You know, I don't just say it and I don't have I have no social media platforms for it or
right.
anything like that.
But people for a long time thought that you were a lesbian.
Right, which is fine.
Which
actually,
is fine.
That's my a lot of times people have thought I was gay and Jewish, which
yeah.
is absolutely both of it's not a criticism
right,
to think that
of
someone.
Yeah.
I just don't happen to be either of
right.
those things.
Do you feel like you fit into the community at all in that way?
I guess because a lot of people from that community have embraced me.
Embraced you, yeah. But I feel like it's almost more of a queer approach, I feel like, you have than heteronormative. Does that make sense at all?
Well, I think that not being classically attractive or not being a person who's that concerned with presenting that version of myself and never have been, even when I was asked back in the 90s and stuff when I was offered such things by style.
Yeah.
It's not like it's an issue now.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But back in the 90s when things were happening and I was younger and there would be offers to like, can we do this magazine shoot or can we dress you for this thing? No, it holds no interest to me.
Huh. Even drunk, did you ever hook up with a girl?
A little bit once, actually twice, just to see what it was like. And it is not right for me. And man, I say that with, you know, I wish it was right for me.
Huh.
I think things
would
have
really?
Been a lot easier and I would have had a lot more sexual partners.
Really?
As sexual as fluid, you know?
Totally.
I would have been happy if I was interested to have guys and girls
right.
involved.
And in-betweens, yeah.
But I have to admit, the concept of being intimate with another female's private parts is just not.
Yeah, it's just not there. That's which is fine. Yeah.
The kissing part, and I've had to make out with women in certain parts, you know, there's been a few independent films and things along the way that no one's ever seen where I've been made out with a female.
Mm-hmm.
And it's lovely, but it's too soft. You know what I mean? Like it's a...
You like the beard.
I just prefer... Yeah, I also tend to, if asked what I'm attracted to in a male, if we're just going purely surface, it would be a swarthier Mediterranean. You know what I mean? Like my boyfriend happens to be Greek.
Yeah.
And her suit.
Right.
And that appeals to me. A less feminine. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's a... And
does he define himself being asexual as well?
I think he has come to be more asexual. I have urged him over the years. And when we first started dating, we had an open relationship. And I think that's why we're still together.
Yeah.
Because...
I love an open relationship.
We knew we liked each other, but it's foolish to assume, especially when you're separated so much.
Right.
Because he was a musician at the time, touring a lot, and I was in Los Angeles a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's silly to, you know, say, we're going to be you know, you're setting yourself up for failure,
absolutely.
I think, a lot of times. And also, if you take the forbidden fruit aspect away from it, it's less.
Yeah, it's less.
The drama's sort of gone, but I know I acted on it, and I know that I encouraged him to act on it. He's just less likely to discuss it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as I became more and more... Or less and less libidinous, especially after I got sober in 2001. Actually, I got less libidinous with him, and there was still some
with other people.
Forays into other people because I felt like, well, there's something about with a stranger that's more appealing to me than with...
Well, there's also something about, like, when you're getting sober, too, to, like, still try to convince yourself that you're still a little crazy.
Right, and I still had some... But then I replaced, after alcohol for a time, I replaced it with pot and would just smoke more
all
weed
day,
than you
day.
Could possibly imagine. So that made me sexual.
Mm. Yeah, pot can make you
and,
sexual, for sure.
Do you smoke pot
still or no?
No. Because I have no sense of moderation.
Mm. Interesting.
It has to be nothing.
With everything.
That's why the one meal a day. How did you know that? Because have I?
Who was I listening to?
I'm sure I've discussed.
I think you're talking to Mark Maron about you only eating one meal a day.
Because I can't go with a regime. You know, it has to be like that. I can't do like, no, you should have five small meals a day. Nothing bigger. I don't want to. And I can't.
Right. You're just going for it.
Here's something that's easy. Mm-hmm. Once.
Yeah. Do you cook?
No.
Not at all.
No.
You're going out to eat one meal.
No,
day.
No. I'll bring
Order
it home.
In. You're ordering
or,
in.
Or
yeah.
No. I feel guilty making somebody deliver my food. I and most of the stuff I eat is out of like a box or a bag. I mean, like I can heat stuff up in a pan.
Yeah.
But I don't cook. But anyway, in summation, I have encouraged my dear friend, boyfriend, to please act on his if he wants to.
Oh, interesting.
I hope that he does.
That's beautiful.
If he has not mentioned it to me. I hope
that he
does.
Then you prefer it that way.
No. He's welcome to.
Oh, he is.
I think the difficulty becomes it hurts him that I'm so encouraging to him. Do you know what I mean? So
I don't want to push him. I am not a jealous person at all. Like, I could give two shits if you're out doing your thing with whatever. But, like, that really pisses people off.
Well, it's
anybody I've ever been
understandably.
With.
I think unless it's their idea,
right?
It's. I did find that when I had that window of sexuality and I didn't want males to be a part of my life, quote unquote, I just wanted sex.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, they liked me. Now they didn't really.
Right.
It's just that I made the decision first that, and then people don't like that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So had I been clingy, none of those people
would
that claimed to have liked me and wanted more would have.
Because they wanted what they couldn't have.
Yeah. Exactly. That's just human nature.
Yeah.
It transcends gender. But I think it's also hurtful, and I understand this with my boyfriend's case, to be urged to go outside the relationship when they would prefer to have intimacy with you.
Mm.
Now, we have a lot of intimacy outside of actual sex.
Emotional intimacy.
We have a lot of emotional intimacy. And also, after 17 years, he still can make me laugh.
Hmm.
There are times, I mean, there's times where I want to rip his head off and I wish that he would just get out of the apartment. You know what I mean? There's certainly that, like, white hot anger.
Right.
We don't raise our voices to each other, but I mean, there can be seething. And then there's times where we stay up giggling like schoolgirls, still to this day, like, laughing at a movie or like making each other laugh. And we also have a very deep shared love of animals and our dog and also Pitbull Rescue that we both work with, and we like the same music, the same comedy.
Yeah.
That whole
thing. I mean, you guys have become a unit at this point.
We are a team.
Yeah.
And like I said, he is my closest friend. Now, it would be probably nicer for him if I was interested in having sex more. But also, there's a lot of baggage with 17 years.
Yeah.
I guess just in my opinion, it's difficult to get excited about having sex again with the same person after 17 years. There's not a lot of new ways to do it that aren't deliberately new ways you're doing it because the thrill is gone.
What was the deciding factor on getting sober?
Oh, the decision was made for me a little bit.
Oh,
I had actually two interventions. The second one took because I was ready that time. You know, it really comes down to that. If you intervene upon a person who's
not ready,
it's probably not going to work.
It's probably going to make it worse, actually.
It sort of did for me, and it pains me to say that because the people have your best interest at heart, and it doesn't. You know, that'll show them.
Right.
I'm still going to be drunk around. You know,
alcohol was the biggest problem.
Alcohol, absolutely.
Mine too. Yeah.
I love pills too. Believe me. To this day, I love a back pill. I do have a bad back, but if somebody's holding like a
Vicodin or something.
I love it. Because I cannot alter my consciousness ever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I can't smoke pot anymore.
Right.
And I can't drink anymore. So sometimes, and I do have sciatica and a herniated disc. When I do take medication, when there's times when my back is worse than others, I love it.
Mm.
But also, when fellow comics sometimes are just holding for no reason and they have an extra back pill, I love it.
Have you ever thought about doing ayahuasca?
I have not, only because It's not particularly interesting to me, and I have interacted with people who are real devotees of it, and it's off-putting.
Yeah. I mean, I did it for the first time over the holidays this past year, and they say it's like 10 years of therapy in 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it was. It, like, solved so many fucking things that I was trying to work through.
But don't you think you did that?
Yeah, for sure, with an aide.
But I also feel like with your podcast and also me doing stand-up and also I'm chatty, I find that I communicate a great deal over things. I don't keep a lot of stuff in, so, and I know a lot of people don't have that luxury, so they whether it be that way, Eastern, right. Western medicine, therapy, whatever, I understand that.
Yeah.
But
Do you go to therapy?
No, I went one time.
Really? One time once.
And realized, I don't want to do this. Also, I felt guilty because I feel so privileged, and it embarrassed me to say, I've got problems. I'm a middle class person who gets to live in a nice apartment in New York. And also, it was something that was sort of foisted upon me after the first intervention, so I resented it.
Right.
But I think it's a fine idea. I think it can't hurt, hopefully, unless it does. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I just, like I said, I'm very communicative.
Mm-hmm.
And not just with strangers. You're not a stranger, per se.
Right.
But I in situations like
you're
this,
open.
We've just met, but we're talking.
We're talking about very intimate things.
Right?
Yeah, totally.
And my friends and I talk all the time. Mm-hmm. And I talk on stage and sometimes with audience people. So I feel quite unburdened, I guess.
Hmm.
But if I felt I needed a therapist, I would do it.
Yeah.
And maybe I should have or should. I don't know.
Yeah. Any regrets in the entertainment industry at
all?
Sure,
absolutely.
Like what?
I regret that I squandered a great many opportunities.
Yeah.
Because,
I mean, from some of the research that I have done, like things like Scream... Right.
Oh, that was well. That's just one of those things where it wasn't a done deal. It's
it
just
wasn't.
That I didn't do. Did I guess it was one of those things like on the list, short list of people like for a possible part, and then I just didn't go to the meeting.
Oh, okay.
Because I was on the road doing stand up or something.
Yeah.
There's a number of things I wish I'd gone to the meeting now. Although Scream is not particularly one of them.
Right.
Unless you just think
I was
for
in,
lucrative.
I was in Scream 4.
No, not that I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying that. Lucrative, I mean, work-wise, that's good. You know, if it's a sequel and you get to go on with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I regret that, I didn't try and be more versatile, take it more seriously, these opportunities I was given. I was just like, what is happening? Why am I keep getting high? You know, and then when it happened, because, like I said, I didn't set out to be an actor. I set out more to be a comic.
To be a comic, yeah.
I would have never said no to the acting part, but I was thinking more in terms of like a show, like SCTV.
Mm.
I wasn't thinking, and then I just got lucky.
Yeah.
But I wasn't thinking it through, and I wasn't mature enough to be more professional.
Hmm.
And I didn't really know what I was doing. I'm not a particularly strong actor, I don't think, and I regret that I didn't try and be better or work harder, and I regret that I was drunk and or hungover 90% of the time. That really upsets me to think about that.
Fucks everything, yep.
All that time wasted and all that growth and maturity, you know, stunted. Seriously. Now, I also thought... I did think it was a fluke, and I was quite right. I mean, as fast as it started, it sort of ended that fast at the end of the night. You know, it was basically over by 2001. But I had a sense that was the way.
But you've been working nonstop.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been doing stand-up nonstop, and then intermittently I audition for things, and if I get them, I get them.
Yeah.
It has not been nonstop.
No,
and
it hasn't.
In the 90s, it was nonstop.
Right.
In fact, there would be times where I was working on one film and doing a wardrobe fitting for the next. I mean, it was just one after the next after the next. Without much thought about what these things were and without much thought about, I should try and get a better skill set, better foundations. I should try.
Yeah.
I should also not be hungover every day.
Yeah.
But like I said, I was like 13. There was boys interested in me for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
There was popularity for the first time. All this thing is quite intoxicating in addition to things that are literally intoxicating.
Yeah.
So I was living a life of a much younger person that would have been something that I maybe had gotten out of my should have gotten out of my system younger.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's not to say people don't struggle with these things
older
and then there's people older than me that still behave that
of
way.
Course.
But I regret that I was not more mature. I regret that I wanted to just drink and hang out all mm-hmm. the time. I regret that I didn't try and be more professional and take advantage and try different things and be versatile and right. all of that.
What do you want to do from here on out?
I would like. Well, I'm starting rehearsals for Marvin's Room with Lily Taylor.
Oh, nice!
And I'm that. Looking very forward to that.
Yeah.
I also still love doing stand up, and I do that. Doing it tonight, I do it probably like 5-6 times a week, mm-hmm. and that's the beauty of living in New York and any of the boroughs. You can do stand up any time.
Yeah.
If you've been here a few years, you can. I'm not saying like the open micer can. So it's tough for open micers at any point.
But anywhere, yeah.
Once you've been here as long as I, since 94, I've lived here. So you get to know every room and every venue that's doing stand-up right. that
you're
are
like,
not comedy.
I mean, you're like stand-up royalty in one way or another.
I don't know if that's the case, but I do know enough people that if I want to do stand-up 7 nights
you
a week,
can
I can,
yeah.
and it's nice to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to continue doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I would very much like to build to a point where, as an actor, some people have faith in me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I'm not saying I deserve to get things. I'm not saying anyone owes me anything. They do not.
Right.
But I would like very much for the perception of me to change. I don't know if it will ever. I doubt it. You know, I've been a quote-unquote has been far longer than I was famous in the 90s.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It's so normal to me now to not be cast in something or not get the role or not even be able to get in the room to audition and stuff. That's very normal to me now.
Right.
It still hurts my feelings, but
I mean,
it is what it is. It feels personal.
Yeah. Would you want to do a new TV show? Were you a series regular on it at all?
I'm happy. Anything that's good.
Yeah.
I am not a genre snob, nothing like that. But my forays into mainstream television, for the most part.
Yeah.
I mean, The West Wing was good.
Yeah.
Criminal Minds was a debacle. Girlfriends Got the Divorce, debacle. You know, I mean, these are not, that is content I have no wish to participate in, you know. Good luck to all of them. You know, I mean, it wasn't that I didn't like it. Cast and crew, all great. Friends of mine, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
That's all fun.
Yeah.
But
the product
especially
itself, yeah.
with TV being as good as
it is now
yeah. since the second golden age, as they say, that was ushered in by The Sopranos.
Mm-hmm.
There's no excuse for that nonsense. There's no excuse
for bad television.
To be on these bad TV shows on mm-hmm. the main networks
yeah.
and even on the off-brand networks. And when you get involved in a shitty show that you're embarrassed,
mm-hmm.
it hurts. It hurts, especially when people you admire or even people you don't know are doing work that's so good and so challenging and you are watching it mm-hmm. on good television because there's so much good television yeah. now. And so, like I said, there's no excuse for the nonsense that still is being churned out.
Right.
And unfortunately, the only access to opportunity sort of I have is for some of these mainstream things like Tough But Fair District Attorney or Sexually Ambiguous Head Nurse. You know what I mean? Like on these procedurals that I have no wish to be a part of, medical procedurals,
yeah.
legal procedurals.
I want no part of that either.
On these mainstream networks.
Right.
Now, I begrudge those that want to do it. Nothing. Go ahead.
Yeah,
do it. Especially if you got a mortgage and kids
yeah.
and hopefully not discerning at all about the scripts. Because there's plenty of actors that are just worker bees and wouldn't either don't or won't recognize a good script from a bad script,
right,
you know, because
right.
they've got other obligations.
Yeah.
And when you don't have children and you don't have a mortgage, it's difficult to justify just getting paid. And I don't want to just get paid. Luckily, when I was making money in the 90s, I didn't buy anything. I was fiscally prudent and it served me very well.
Mm.
And I don't really, I'm not a big spender.
Yeah.
So
you've never wanted to own a house or anywhere?
No, I own my apartment.
You own your apartment now, yeah.
Yeah, that's the biggest ticket item I ever, and I bought that in 94. That's it. I don't have a car.
Huh.
I don't have a second home. Huh. I don't have label, you know, clothes with label. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't spend because I don't want to have to do certain.
You don't have to work for it.
Certain jobs that make me uncomfortable. And in fact, when I was on Criminal Minds and when I was on Girlfriend's Guide, just as two examples, I asked, can I please leave? And I don't mean that in a petty way.
Right.
Or even an ungrateful way. It just became abundantly clear that there's plenty of other actors that
would
be very, very happy
job,
to be
yeah.
here, and no one will miss me.
Right.
Really, if you take me out of the equation of either of these shows, no one will miss me because it's just like character number 14. You know what I mean? Especially in the in the crime procedurals.
Right.
You can plug anybody.
They're just pounding them out.
And
yeah.
a lot of the crime procedurals, like the Criminal Minds franchise or any of these, it's people either at the beginning or sort of the end of their career. Mm. It's for younger actors who you've not seen in anything
right.
else.
That's their break.
Who are the young, good-looking
yeah.
ones in their skinny jeans. And then the older ones, especially for the ladies, it's those that don't have opportunity in film anymore.
Right.
And they are not being honest. If you say, I wanted to be on NCIS
for
Las Vegas. I know I used to be an A-list movie actor, but yeah. this part I couldn't, because there's no there. Hmm. There's nothing satisfying hmm. about those torture porn, slightly misogynist franchises.
Yeah.
Just make it sausage. It's just a moneymaker
right.
for the networks. And it's not like anybody's busting their ass to write a good script on those things.
Yeah.
It's just a paycheck, which is fine if you don't care
right.
about that. And so my hope is, and I don't care how small the part is, whatever, anything that is something you wouldn't be ashamed to say to your friends and family, you should watch this.
Well,
it's
have
good.
You ever thought about creating your own material?
Oh, yeah. I have no need to create content just for the sake of it. And right now, I don't feel there's a story that needs to be told.
Okay.
Over the years, I've had development deals and worked on scripts
right.
on my own and with partners. And I'll tell you, after the first or second meeting and network notes, I'm out.
It's,
I don't have a stomach for it. It's not me.
It's fucking hard.
And it's hard. And it's the nonsense that comes back at you.
Mm.
And the only thing you have is the power of no. So for any of these deals I've had over the years, I've always said, you know what? You want to do this? Go ahead. Take it.
Not
you
me.
Know, change it. Whatever you want to do. I'm not going to be part of it.
Right.
But that's fine, you know, because the writing on the wall becomes very clear. And unfortunately,
right.
your agents and stuff can push you because they want the commission.
Yeah.
So they're not concerned whether it's going to
it's
be
gonna
a huge compromise.
Happy.
And then like a lot of us, you included, I'm sure, you make many pilots that don't make it there. That's
yeah.
fine.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody sees it. And
yeah, it's a good paycheck.
They're nothing like what you thought it was going to be.
Right, for sure.
So I guess my wish is to continue doing stand-up, to do more theater.
Huh.
And to at least be allowed in the room, just a chance to audition
chance.
For some of the better projects. And when I say better, just something of quality in any genre.
Yeah, that just drives you.
Yeah, that is intellectually stimulating,
yeah.
and everybody is in it for the right reasons.
Right.
That, I
what
guess
would
that
you say
be.
Your proudest moment is?
I would say working at Air America.
Hmm.
Yeah, the years I worked at Air America, I guess that is something that I'm proud of. Really, other things I've done, there's really nothing that you'd go, wow, thank God you did that. You know what I mean? Like, because it's a sort of a selfish endeavor pursuing entertainment. You know what I mean? Whether it
yeah.
be stand-up or acting or something. In a lot of ways, again, it's part of the human condition to want to be seen, to want to be heard. Some of us take it a little further than others,
absolutely.
You know? And
some
now with the new mediums,
everybody
just creates content.
yeah.
So
you're not on social media at all, right?
No. There's a fake me tweeting in a fake Facebook meme.
And a fake Instagram too.
And a fake, yeah, I don't know why. I don't know why.
Do you feel like millennials know who you are?
It's case by case.
Case by case, yeah.
Yeah, if anything, there's been resurgences of Romy and Michelle that like younger
right.
audiences like see Romy and Michelle. Wet Hot American Summer.
Mm-hmm.
I would say some occasionally if I've been on Broad City or something like that.
Mm.
But for the most part, there's no, why would they?
Yeah.
Or if they see me on like Wyatt Cenac's comedy show or Eugene Merman, it has to be something that millennials
right.
are currently watching that I participate in. But it's odd because sometimes there'll be people that are younger. I can see it, like they'll pass me in the street and I think they think they know me. Oh, is that my older sister's friend or
right,
my
right,
mom's
right,
friend?
Yeah. Did we go to high school together?
Well, no, they're too young for that.
Well, yeah,
but I
get that.
They think that I am someone that an older relative of theirs is friends with or
right,
something like
yeah.
that. So there's like a
do people
vague
ever ask you, like, what do I know you from? Like, what
oh,
project
yeah, yeah.
do I know you from? Yeah.
Or,
what do you say? How do you answer that question?
I just say, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or sometimes, a lot of times people say, no offense, but you look like Janine Garofalo. which is a strange
no
thing.
No offense?
No offense. And I like, none taken. I don't know, but it's often said to me, like, no offense. Like, I don't want to hurt your feelings, but you look like Janine. So apparently what they're saying
yeah.
is that is not a nice comparison.
Hmm.
But then when I say, oh, I am Janine Garofalo, they'll say, oh, my God, you look so much better in person, which I
well,
guess
you
is
look
a compliment.
Fucking, you look great right now.
No, it's just that I look so awful when I was younger. And also the camera does not like me.
Mm.
You know, some people look
yeah.
worse. And also the type of roles, especially later in my career that I'm given, they really don't do me wardrobe, hair, makeup, wardrobe in the, these terms, or don't
watched,
do me any favors.
I watched Tiny Boxes last night, and I think that you looked great in Tiny Boxes.
The little, tiny, boxes?
Little boxes. Not tiny
it,
boxes.
It's gone through three titles. I haven't seen that. It used to be called Clark, and then it was called something else.
Little Boxes.
Yeah.
You look great.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't imagine that. But that was fun.
Yeah, doing totally.
I love Melanie.
She's so good.
And I'm sorry to say Lafayette, the gentleman who played her husband, right. Who was Lafayette in True Blood.
Yeah.
When I first saw him in True Blood years ago, that blew me. And I remember sitting next to my boyfriend going, "Who?" Sometimes you'll see somebody and you're like,
so
"Who is that?"
Yes.
And when I love it because there's some people when I watch them, it's like taking a class. And I think you can't learn what they know. There are some actors that are so very good in everything, and even in shitty things, they're right. The best thing in it.
Yeah.
I feel that way about Elias Koteas, Samantha Morton. Mm. There's just something about them.
It just takes the whole movie. Yeah.
That they are it.
Right.
Does that make sense? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's something about them where it is something that, whether it comes easy to them or not, they make it look like it comes easily to them. And then there's some great actors, though, you can see them acting, though.
Yeah.
They're very, very good, but you can see...
You see the process.
The work a little bit.
Yeah,
and that's
for sure.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
It's just a different style.
Right.
But there are some, and Samantha Morton, as I mentioned, is one of them.
Where they just take you
where,
completely away.
From her first film, which was Dreaming of Joe Leeds, I believe, straight through some big thing like Minority Report or a medium thing like Jesus' Son, she's in it or in the pot, whatever it is.
When you hear the title of the show, The Love Bomb, what do you see?
I didn't know. I didn't. When I first heard the title and didn't know anything else about it, my instinct was, I don't think that'll be right for me. Because it's the love. How do you know? Because there's also a comic that used to be called The Love Sponge.
Uh-huh.
And then there's like Morning Drive, it's the love bomb. You know, that you don't know. And then that very lovely film you made, which was so very kind of you to do, and it took your time, and it was a heartfelt, sincere thing. And I thought, well, yeah, it seems like a very nice kid. And I'm sorry to say kid, but you seem like a kid to me.
Yeah, I'll take it.
You're very young, yeah?
28.
Yeah, you're very young. So I literally could have birthed you, so I'm going to say kid, and I mean that fondly. But so I was like, I'm not going to say no to somebody who's took this time. That means they're committed to this thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a flippant thing, the love bomb.
Yeah.
But then when I didn't know how I was going to talk about it. That's why when we started, I said, I tried to think, what perspective can I bring to this that maybe, because I don't know how many people you've talked to about this, how many episodes you've done.
We've done around 35.
So it can be a topic that's like...
You're the first asexual person in my life I've ever talked to, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe you haven't, you wouldn't know. How would you know unless they said...
Well, I talk a lot about sexuality.
A lot of people, though, are not comfortable admitting.
Right.
Because we are told... That's, you know, and then also movies and television make couples believe like there's something wrong with you if you're not really sexually active right after the baby's born and 15 years in. You know what I mean? Like the myth of romantic love is perpetuated by entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it puts a big stress on relationships, especially marriages, especially with new small children and people that have been together for a long time. They see on television and in film that these people are still hot for each other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And
I don't know that the reality bears that out because life gets in the way of that.
Right.
And also just it is what it is.
Yeah.
And so also that's why I think there's a lot of infidelity. Because there is, you know, marriage is an institution from the 12th century when people lived to about the age of 25. Now people live routinely to 90 and beyond. It is untenable.
Right.
To stay.
What about, the financial benefits of being married? Have you ever thought about getting married just for those purposes?
Well, I don't know that it would be more beneficial.
Don't you pay less taxes?
I don't know. I was married for 20 years and didn't know it.
That
was a whole other thing. That's a true story.
Yeah.
I
got married in Vegas.
I got married in Vegas to my then boyfriend.
Right.
As a joke. And then found out because I was in a blackout
state. Yep.
We went the whole hog and signed papers and stuff like that, which his lawyer pulled up for real when he got married for real.
20 years later,
20 years later, and then we had it dissolved by a notary public. But I have no idea if it's, I guess it's more beneficial.
I don't really know either. I actually just emailed my business manager this morning asking what the benefits are because me and Bethany are talking about getting married.
Right, but you're incorporated, presumably.
Yes.
So I don't know how that affects.
Yeah, I don't know either.
When you're incorporated.
So we'll find out.
When you file quarterly and stuff like that.
But also, like, we want to freeze some of her eggs, so we're talking about health insurance, too, and if that's covered.
Well, that makes sense. If you are planning on this journey you're going to take together that involve other humans eventually.
Right.
Yes, of course, I would think that
the
that sounds right.
Go through the paperwork, yeah.
Right, and it's going to be better for the child, if there is one,
right.
to have that kind of structure and stability or or in the event that you guys go your separate ways, at least there was words on a piece of paper that provide for the child, what have you.
I mean, the thing is, we've already gone our separate ways, like, romantically, but we're still so tied to each other. Emotionally. She's like,
you
want
to have a child.
Yeah, for sure.
But do you leave open the possibility that you will be the biological parents of this child, but one or both may have other partners along the way?
For sure.
And that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, we think so.
Then do it.
Yeah. Do you still smoke cigarettes?
Of course I do.
You do? Yeah.
All natural.
Organic American Spirits?
No, I don't like American Spirits. They're called English Ovals.
English Ovals?
Yes, it's just tobacco and paper. It's like a Rolly.
Yeah, I smoke Rolly Spirits, the reds. English
I just don't like the taste as much of American
Spirits.
Can
I try one of these English Ovals?
Yes, of course you can, but not in this little room.
Yeah, no, not in this. All right, last question, and we've kind of answered this, but this is how I end each episode, and I kind of want to just, I just want you to give it to me good. What is love?
Love to me is a intense interest in the welfare of something or someone and a passionate connection to it, even if that thing or person doesn't connect. That, like, that's how
it doesn't matter.
It's unconditional.
Yeah.
Until it isn't, I guess. But, you know, I guess it's something that you devoid of contempt, because contempt is the killer of any relationship, right? Contempt. What is the number one thing that destroys relationships, platonic and romantic? Contempt.
Yeah.
Once you are contemptuous of someone or something, that's over.
It's over.
You know what I mean? And whether it be in the micro, in your personal life, or at the macro, in the political world, the contempt that I think Republicans have for people is the worst part of it all.
I can't believe that we fucking have talked for an hour and 20 minutes and we haven't talked about anything politically.
I know. Well, actually, it's fatiguing. If you have emotional, it's fatiguing to discuss politics when it's as bad as it is out there. But I would say that that's the large scale contempt. You see that it destroys the relationship between citizens and the elected.
Yeah.
But your personal life, once you even introduce doubt and contempt, it's a rocky road.
You've said publicly that you hate yourself before. Do you love yourself today?
Nah. Again, I'd say it's case by case. I don't have the self-loathing I did when I was drinking. A lot of that was chemical, drenched limbic brain depression, which I know now. Yeah. You know, when you drench yourself
in
alcohol, you're going to be depressed. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the hatred was alcohol-related depression and shame and guilt.
I had that all.
All of that. But there are times when I still will cringe myself to sleep replaying what I think are humiliating exchanges from that day or from 1969. You know what I mean?
Like, doesn't matter.
Just this Rolodex of like, oh no, why did I say that?
Yeah.
So that's stupid, and it's a time waster, and it's essentially, again, a narcissistic endeavor to even replay these things that are embarrassing to you. But I don't think I love myself, because also self-love, I think, can be overrated, because you know, what if you're wrong? You know, there's plenty of people
you're wrong, though.
Well, your behavior tell you. There's a lot of people who are pretty pleased with themselves, and their behavior should indicate. Or when people say no regrets, got no regrets, and I'm like, really, none?
Yeah.
None in your whole life. There's nothing you would do differently. Mm. You know, and it's usually people who have some regrets who say it the most belligerently.
Right.
No regrets, man. No regrets. They tend to be.
Well, it's just a lie.
Chip on their shoulder saying it, but
to cover everything.
I got lots of regrets. I would do a lot differently, and I have a much better relationship with myself now.
Yeah.
But just because I'm older.
So young Janine Garofalo, proud of Janine Garofalo today.
I would be shocked at the progress I made.
Yeah.
You know, in certain areas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. That's such a different person that it's like it would be like two strangers meeting. The young, you know, even the Jeanine Gruffalo of your age, which is young, you know, 28-year-old me, which I think is very, very young, but it's two different people.
Right.
The vision, every vision of the world, everything is different. And definitely young.
Yeah.
Although I would say, oh, you did become a comedian. Like that would be something as young as like fifth grade when I first started thinking of it. That I would go, wow, it happened? You actually really did that?
Cause, you did it.
I was always a quitter also. You know what I mean? It shocks me that I stuck with it.
Wow.
That and making jewelry. That's like two things I've always stuck with is I love to make jewelry and
stand-up. Did you make that necklace?
No.
No, you didn't.
No.
Mm. You work with crystals and the whole thing?
No.
You collect beads, though.
I like beads.
Yes.
Yeah, crystals.
I don't know you collect beads.
Yes. I'm not a good jewelry maker. I just enjoy going to bead stores and stringing beads.
Yeah,
and
for
stuff.
Sure.
But yeah, crystals are, I don't mind them, but they don't tend to.
You don't get, you're not.
I'm not into it.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Seriously. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I definitely was like, I don't want to say nervous, but I wasn't sure exactly how I was going to navigate this conversation. And you just made it so
luckily
easy.
Luckily for you, I steamroll usually most conversations that I have because I can't stop talking. So it worked out in that sense.
No, but I definitely think that I've like learned a lot about a lot of things from having this conversation.
Well, when you get to be a 53-year-old woman, hopefully. You know.
The day will come.
Yeah, and you'll say, remember Jeanine from AARP? And she did this and said this. And now that I'm a 53-year-old woman.
Yeah, now
because
I get
by the time you're 53, this will be possible.
Ugh, I mean, the whole world.
Everything will be so fluid.
Oh, my God. The fluid, the drip. All right. Goodbye.
Bye.
Jeanine Gruffalo, you are a legend. Thank you so much for coming in and doing this episode. I just feel I just learned so much from you. You have an incredible wealth of knowledge and perspective that is also relative. And I don't know, I think it's a voice that is important in the world. I have always found you to be fucking hilarious. And now I find you to be a real human being that, you know, has layers like we all do, you know. So thanks again, Jeanine. You're amazing. And hey, look, I want to talk about something here. LGBTQIA. Yes, we have an A. We keep getting new letters all the time, but we have an A in the LGBTQ plus community. A stands for asexual. Now, I know so many people in the world have never really heard of asexuals or don't believe that asexuality can be a real thing, but it is absolutely a valid lifestyle. And on this show, the most important thing that I preach is every single person needs to be treated as an individual, and we need to respect the way that they live their lives. You may not have to agree with it or think that it's real, but you have to just respect it, okay? If anybody wants to understand asexuality a little bit more, we all have the internets now, so jump onto the Googles and look up asexuals. Look up aromantics, demisexuals, gray asexual. The experiences of these people are real. They are words and labels for a reason. This is an episode for all of the asexuals in the world. Power to the A, ladies and gentlemen. Power to the A. Jeanine, surprisingly, does not have any social media, but she is in a show right now on Broadway. She is in Marvin's Room at the Roundabout Theater that is running through August 27th. So get yourself some tickets and go see Jeanine kill it on stage. Tickets for Marvin's Room are available at roundabouttheater.org. And hey, follow my ass on Instagram at Nico Tortorella. Leave comments. I read them all. I swear to God, I read them all. I swear to the universe. I read them all. So comment. I'd love to hear what you all have to say. I love you. This is the Love Bomb. We explode and we make in space for everyone. Everyone is welcome here. Everyone. I love you all.
This is the Love Bomb. Spreading that love around. This is the Love Bomb. And this is the show. Yeah, it's the Love Bomb. We're taking you up and down. This is the Love Bomb. We're about to explode.
Nico. Thanks again to our partner, Spoke, SiriusXM's new app that allows you to listen to podcasts, radio programs, documentaries, curated specifically just for you. Go to hearspoke.com/at will. That's HEARSPOKE.com/ATWILL right now.